tomorrow to tie up some of the loose ends and some of the other issues, really, so that we can have some closure before Yontif, because we transition into the Parsha and Yontif and Yonim. So, if you look at the topic of Kol Dol and Gvar, so there are a lot of questions. And I want to say from the outset that it's tempting to try to put the different Rishonim into packages and into boxes. It's not clear how well that works. So we'll look at those possibilities. We have to see if it's really possible or if it's really the case necessarily that everything's going to fit in as neatly as we might want it to. But it doesn't take away from the fact that there are various angles that seem to exist within this concept. So when we talk about Kol Dol and Gvar, so fundamentally, in addition to the question of whether we're focusing on some type of a physical process or a Eidus process, so we have also differences in Rishonim on other issues which seem to relate. So to begin with, we know that, for example, the Rashbam and the Rush seem to have different approaches towards what exactly is the strength of Kol Dol and Gvar. And the Rashbam, what was his perspective, the Rashbam and Bava Basra? What he says that essentially, how do we approach Kol Dol and Gvar? And it seems like we don't know what exactly is, sorry?
Selik.
Right, so Selik is the word that the Acharonim want to put onto it. So it could be correct. You know, it could be right, but there are those who argue if that's really what the Rashbam is getting at. But essentially, he said the Beis Din can't fully address it because it is a topic that's essentially beyond what they can see in front of them. And we're also concerned that since it is something that has some potential resolution, so therefore, it could lead to Ivus HaDin. If Beis Din, for example, were to impose Yachloku in such a situation, so that could lead to a corruption, so to speak, of the Din. Now, it's an interesting question to keep in mind.
As some have noted, that factor of Ivus HaDin that the Rashbam mentions, and he's worried about what will happen, so is that a positive reason towards Kol Dol and Gvar, or is that a negative reason towards, say, Yachlokum? You hear the issue? Now, what exactly are we saying? Are we saying that Kol Dol and Gvar has some type of a pathway to some truth here, so we'll prefer it? Or maybe he's just saying that really Yachlokum would be better, but we're worried about the possibility of Yachlokum imposing something which later comes out to be neged the Rebetzius. Yes, sir? So that's a part of the question. It doesn't have to be the same thing. You could ask a similar question about that phrase. I don't know if it has to be the same thing.
Yeah,
no, with an ayin. It's in the, I don't have a Bava Basra in front of me. If you did it with, no one has a Bava Basra here, right? So you have a Bava Basra? Thank you. That's very helpful. So where is it? It's the long Hassam. So in the end of the long Yiram Aschel Hassam, so he describes a situation where we say, Kol Dol and Gvar, starting from the middle of the sentence here, he says, "Ikol mekum lo demilsa." There could, the truth could come out. Im yavo v'yaidu shalmihu. Hilkach ein kan lomer chaluka v'shuda. We shouldn't use either of those two methods. Deshama yavo eidim v'yistru es adin shadanu bezdin. Hilkach ein bezdin is kakim lahem ladin din. Shasofo lavo lidei ivus. So, you can understand why you'll call that a siluk. I mean, it sounds like he's almost exactly saying that, but essentially saying Beis Din is not willing to address this issue with any of their other arrows in their quiver, they're not going to use Yachloku or Shudda, because since the truth could come out, and therefore their division, or their assigning it to one party or the other through Shudda Dedaini, could result in Ivus Hadin, in Ivus, it says here. So, what is that concern? Is that saying that that's a reason to be afraid of Yachloku, which we would have liked to do maybe, but we're worried about what will happen? Which you could parallel to Zilus de Beidina. Zilus de Beidina, we're not 100% sure what that means either. Zilus de Beidina mean that we're just afraid people will disrespect Bezdin because they're blatantly wrong about things, or because they end up changing their mind about things? Or is it that we don't want to expose Bezdin to issues where their psak is really going to be too far from the reality for fundamental reasons? So we're not 100% sure what Zilus de Beidina means, so we're not sure if this is the same thing as Zilus de Beidina, but it could be parallel to it. But for a number of reasons, we don't want Bezdin to be involved in something where it's going to issue a psak, and the reality will be clear that it's not in accordance with the facts. So you could see the Rashbam coming from two different directions, that we like Kol De'olam Gvar because it can lead to some type of proof, and therefore let it play out, or that really we don't like Kol De'olam Gvar, but we need to do it because our other systems could get us in trouble, could get us in a situation where we are imposing something false upon the litigants. So that's in terms of the Rashbam. The Rush, as you probably seen, asserts something very different. We started to explain this Rush yesterday, but the Rush appears in a number of places. You can look up the Rush in Bava Metzia, you can look in our Sugya in Bava Metzia and Daf Beis. He appears in Bava Basra, we hear in Cheskas Abatim. He talks about it in his Tshuvas as well, in Simenai and Zion, where he essentially says that the nature of Kol De'olam Gvar is that it is a process that could bring about the truth. And it's a fascinating approach to this, that because, first of all, the Eidos is hopefully consistent with the truth, and beyond that, that's the really fascinating part, that the energy, the adrenaline, is going to be with the person who's actually right. So he's going to end up being stronger, he's going to end up having the power, the motivation, because he knows that he is the truth, he has God on his side. And the other one, the Rami, he's going to give up, especially because he also knows that working out there somewhere, there may be proof that could mess up his whole project. We mentioned yesterday how this is consistent with some psychological principles. First of all, the idea that Dan Ariely is a psychologist who recently came out with a book about this, that dishonesty kind of goes on a spectrum, and a lot of people are willing to be a little bit dishonest but not willing to be very dishonest. So the degree to which somebody's going to go if he's trying to pull off a scam is limited. So eventually he's going to drop out of the game. That's what Rush seems to be saying. He may be willing to take that first step and say it's mine until it gets too heated, but once he has to really push for it, he's not going to stick it through. Or we also mentioned yesterday, it also could correlate to loss aversion theory, that people in general are much more motivated to keep what they have than to get something of equal value that they don't have. And therefore, if that's what the two parties are dealing with here, the rightful owner could lose his property, and the liar is looking to gain something that he doesn't have already. So it's going to be a greater motivation and a greater passion to the person who's afraid of losing what he actually has already. So who knows if either of those points are what the Rush was getting at, but that's what he says, that there's going to be a greater truth that's going to come out of this, leading those who have commented on the Rush to say that this is essentially a psak. This is not Bezdin stepping away. This is Bezdin overseeing this duel, so to speak, under the assumption that the duel will play out consistent with the truth, hopefully. Dove?
Isn't that only going to make sense if there's definitely not... It could be they're both telling the truth. It could be they both believe that they're correct. So wouldn't you run...
So we'll get to that. So we'll get to in a situation, if that's the case,
So then you would think that that should not be a kol dal mivar situation according to this, and we'll have to see if that's the way everyone understands it. So one of the issues that the Rishonim address, which seems to flow from this question, right, it seems to be, if you see things this way, that in the way that Rabbi Chanan and many others understood this, Rabbi Chanan in his comments to Baba Basra, and many others followed in this path, that the Rashbam is essentially a siluk, essentially Bezdin is not involved, they're just letting this happen. And the Rush saying more than that, that Bezdin is involved. So, and it is essentially a psak of Bezdin, that affects a number of issues. Among the issues is how long do we let this go on for? Right, the Rush specifically addresses that question. According to the Rush, how many cycles of kol dal mivar can we have? One. You know, you have a process, one person ends up with it, and then he wins. And then we're not going to let the other guy grab it from him. Which would make sense if you believe that this really is a psak. If this is a psak, so then we should let it be that way. Among those who explicitly take on the Rush on this issue is who? Shita Mekubetzes, which I brought the copy with here because there's something very interesting. I'm going to read it together with you. Tell me what you notice very interesting about the language. I'm not even 100% sure whether it's intentional or not, so tell me what you think. So let's, if you have it with you, I'll read it out loud. Either way, the Shita Mekubetzes says as follows. This is on Lamadala Mebeiz and Baba Basra. Al Masha Kasav Harash Lal Bipsaka. Call me shetigaver yado b'pam rishona. Specifically focusing on that line, that it's the first round, that's all that matters. Kasa b'shit v'l'noidu l'mi. B'elu advarim einam berurim etzli. Sha'atam sh'amar kol d'olam gvar. Mipnei she'en bezdin zakukim lizakek l'dinam. Kevin d'leke d'rara d'mamon l'travayu. V'leke l'mekem ala d'milsa. Sorry? That's what's very striking. So we'll come back to that. That's what I wanted you to notice. So Shkayach, I'm noticing, and we'll finish reading, we'll come back to that line now. V'kev v'chikain, noach l'anicham l'asos k'ritzonam v'lo nasa anu din sh'yach alav l'idei tos. So essentially, no, we are staying away from this. Right? It's a different phrasing of that same Ivos line that the Rashbam had. We don't want to do a din that may be a mistake. Hilkach kol misha miskaber yada b'chol pam harehu brishoso. Go as many cycles as you want. Anybody who's able to overcome the other, he gets it. Ad shita tigaber yada echad o bezroa o beraya ad kam. So one guy is so definitively on top that he scares the other guy off, whether physically or with proof, as he says. So clearly, the shita mekubetzes is very much against the Rush. So included in this issue of you characterize it as a psak or not is this question of should we allow it to keep going on and on, or does it happen once and it's over? So parenthetically, as Aaron noticed, right, there does seem to be a funny line here, but in the context of kol dal gvar, he describes it as leka lemekim ala demilta. So what do you think he means by that? I see three possibilities. Why is it that everywhere else we see this is applying an ikkala mekum aladim elsa, and here it says leka? So one possibility, it could be a typo. I've looked at different editions of the Shita, and the Shita is also quoted a lot in later Svarim, and it's always leka, this passage, as far as I can tell. So I don't know if that means anything. You can still just copy a typo from each other, but so far I haven't seen a text that quotes this specific Rishon differently. Okay, so it's probably not a typo. So what are our other two possibilities?
Aaron? It also makes sense if you're saying that I think it is based on exactly the law. So if it's saying that it's based on nothing else to do, then I can get involved. So if I would like to make them, they have to say that there's no evidence, nothing they can make sack based on, so they're going to say, you guys fight it out.
So he's usually in a different context, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the most likely shot. The in-between possibility, I was going to say, is that maybe he disagrees with all the other Rishonim, which seem to be based on the Gemara, so it's hard to disagree, but you could be forced in that position, that he says, lech lo mekum alam milsa is the context in which you would say this, but it's hard to read it that way. So I think the most likely is what I think Aaron was just saying, is that he's talking about two different things. Ikal make them a lot of milsa usually means that the truth could come out some way. And when he says leka, he means that Bezdin can't do it. Bezdin doesn't have any mechanism to figure out what's going on. So therefore, Bezdin should stay out of it and let the two of them duke it out, which is a scenario where Ikal will make them a lot of milsa. So again, it's very striking. It's just the opposite of what we've seen together with this, but I think that's the most likely interpretation, unless, again, it's a typo, which I don't know if that's supported by anything. So Aaron, put your hands up. Ellie?
Is concerned on the players, or is it based?
Where do you see, I'm sorry, where did the Kitsonim?
Yeah,
the players, the two people to himself. If Bezdin is not going to get involved, they're going to let the two duke it out.
That they want it to be called down with that?
Essentially, yeah. Or they want to if you're not going to help. I mean, in the Gemara, when Kol Mukavaris is mentioned, so there's an appeal to Bezdin to seize it and to put it into escrow. So it sounds like they don't want to do Kol Mukavaris. So you could try to be medayik in what exactly it means by their rutzon. But yeah, essentially they're going to leave it to them to figure out what to do. So this is essentially the Tfisa issue, which we see also the question in Rishonim and in the Shulchan Aruch about can one party grab it from the other party? Is it essentially still open game? That's an expression. Fair game? Open something.
Open season.
Open season on each other. So can they still grab it from each other? So you saw Tosfos and Bava Metzia. Some of the Rishonim thought yes, there's still the possibility of Tfisa, which seems to suggest that Bezdin has not ruled on this. Right, if Bezdin has assigned the property to one person, presumably it's Gezela to allow Tfisa, to allow somebody else to grab it away and to not interfere, presumably that's Gezela. So the Rishonim who allow Tfisa probably don't see this as an actual din, as opposed to those who don't, which includes the Shulchan Aruch. Right, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Kuf Lamed Tes, in talking about Kol Da'olam Gvar, that once it's happened, we're not going to allow Tfisa. Yes, sir?
If we would allow Tfisa, would we say the object belongs to whoever has it?
We'll say that, yeah, that essentially Tfisa is a continuation of Kol Da'olam Gvar, which is why it's essentially the same issue as the one before about whether it's one go-around or endless go-arounds. Right? A Tfisa is a step of, and it's a new round in the Kol Da'olam Gvar. You became stronger and you grabbed it away. And then he became stronger and he grabbed it back.
Once each person actually grabs it.
So then you get into another question. So that's the next issue. So what seems to flow out of that, I don't know if this is the question you're intending to ask, but it's in your words. So Ephraim is asking, so when it's in somebody's hands under this context, does it, quote unquote, actually belong to them? Does it belong to them al pidin? That's what you wanted to ask. Right? So that's also probably a question that emerges from this. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman talks about this also in the Kovet Shirim in Ksubis. And Osnan Hey, if you take a look over there, it's in the same volume as the one in Baba Basra. So if you have one, you have the other. But he talks about, in Baba Basra, he talks about the Rosh and the Rashbam. And this question, he talks about, it's Nogei, let's say Sukkis is coming up. So let's say you have a fight with somebody over an esrog. Very easily imaginable. Right? That's the kind of thing sometimes people fight over. I remember I was once walking through the esrog market in Eretz Yisrael with one of the rabbis from KBY, and everybody was examining all of the love in the esrogim. And he said at the time, probably the greatest soul they have to worry about is Esrog HaGuzzle Puzzle. Because people are going to fight over it and grab from each other and take the Esrogim under all kinds of circumstances. So we can imagine somebody fighting over an Esrog. Right, so let's say we say Kol Da'olam Gvar, and whoever has it right now has got it. So Esrog, the first day of Sukkot, in order to be Yotzei the Mitzvah of Esrog, there is a din of Lachem. So does somebody who has an esrog under the category of Kol Da'olam Gvar,
Can he be Yotze? If not, he's really going to be bummed out, because that was kind of the whole point. Right? That's one of the main functions of this Rogan, is to use it for this mitzvah, and if it's not going to work, then it's kind of pointless. So, or pitomless, I guess, is the proper expression. So, what would you say? So, can you be Yotze Esrog? Luv and Esrog with a Luv and Esrog that you have because of the Kol Dov and Gvar? So it presumably also emanates from this question, right? Do we say that Beis Din has granted this to you, it's a psak? Or do we say, no, it's, Beis Din is not involved, and we are not going to interfere with your holding on to it until the issue is finally resolved, whenever that is. But right now, your status is an iffy status, and we're not going to necessarily call it, to quote Ephraim, actually yours. It's not going to have the din of Lachem. It's an important question.
What would you define as Kol Dov and Gvar in that case?
So it involves both.
Paying for it. I mean, if they both paid for it.
Yeah, so let's see, we have to say, I took it out of the Shuk context. Let's say they already, it's already been bought, and now they're fighting over who actually owns it.
Yeah, but who paid for it?
So we don't know. So we can't do the same thing we have in Shem Oksan, right? Where the Gemara asks, let's see who paid for it, and we can't figure out who paid for it. So let's say there's some debate over who paid for it. We don't have that venue. But the same scenario the Gemara in Daf Beis and the Beis brings up, that you could try that and it doesn't work. So now you have two people, each one claiming it's theirs. And who's up first? Yeah, Jonathan?
Well, we're saying, like the Rosh Hashanah of Pasukim, that it is a real it's not a problem
at all. So you might say, okay, so fine, the Shulchan Aruch says you can't be tofus away. It's a fair perspective to take, that if you assume the Shulchan Aruch is correct, then probably you would say lachem. That's a reasonable assumption. Hi.
Don't we say more Kol Dov and Gvar, like the cases of like not metalton and things like just hard to be like your position on the ship isn't really anybody's obsession at sea.
That was one of the major nekudas that pointed in that direction, right? That we don't have chazaka. So you'd have to assume, if you have the Esra case, you would have to assume it's not in somebody's pocket, right? And it's not Ochsen either. You know, we've been talking the whole time about how we decide what makes something Ochsen or Kol Dov and Gvar. So we can make up a scenario where an Esra is Kol Dov and Gvar, especially they get pretty big nowadays. So you could imagine that you have this huge Esra and looking to show off in shul, now all of a sudden the other guy claims it's his. So took it out. Now that'll be the ultimate irony. You know, that's the story, the short story. And the two people who fought over an Esra called Dov and Gvar, then they came to shul, it turns out the Rabbi Paskin's not Lachem anyway. End of the story. So irony, the lesson is you shouldn't fight over Esra. So you can imagine such a story. So how exactly would we assume this? So that seems to emanate from this issue. It is interesting, there's a Trumas Hadeshin, which we'll get more into his context in a minute, but the Trumas Hadeshin, I think, is Lashitasa, because you may recall we talked about the Trumas Hadeshin last week. So the Trumas Hadeshin we're talking about now is Shin Nun Beis, but last week we talked about Shin Yud Dalet. And I think in both places he reflects a negative attitude towards Kol Dov and Gvar. And we mentioned last week at Trumas Hadeshin, where he talks about the nature of the chazaka of Shnayim Ochsen, about the two parties holding the talis. Is that a real chazaka? Is it a weak chazaka? And the Trumas Hadeshin had said that really it's not much of a chazaka. It's very minimal. But all it accomplishes is that we don't have to say Kol Dov and Gvar, which is good, because Kol Dov and Gvar is a dina de parsoi. I assume that's a reference to a line in the Gemara in Bava Basra, that the Dina de Parsoi has no reason for it. So it seems like he's down on Kol Dov and Gvar, which we mentioned in our whole discussion of what is really the preferable system. Is Yachloku the preferable system? Is Kol Dov and Gvar the preferable system? Does it depend on whether you're looking for MS or harmony, etc., etc.? So Tshuva Sadeshin, and that Tshuva sounded negative. And here too, he sounds pretty negative. He says that essentially we'll say Kol Dov and Gvar, similar to what we saw in the Rashbam, what we just saw in the Shittim Mekubetzes, that we'll say Kol Dov and Gvar when Ikol Mekum Ledemelsa, that's different than Shittim Mekubetzes, but Ikol Mekum Ledemelsa, and therefore we're worried, he says a little more powerfully, we're worried that Beis Din, the Piskei Beis Din, will be Mistarim, Nishvarim, they'll be contradicted, they'll be broken. We're worried about a real bizayin to bezdin. So it sounds again consistent with that earlier attitude. And really, he doesn't like kol olam dvar. It's not a great thing. But what can we do? We can't expose ourselves to a possible embarrassment here. It's going to eventually come out that somebody has more proof, and it's going to be contradictory to what bezdin has done. So we're stuck with kol olam dvar as a bidyevet. So the context of that truma sedeshim we'll mention in a second, because I forgot, somebody asked a few minutes ago a question that leads up to this, that I think it was Dove asked about, what if you don't necessarily have a liar? So the scenario that the Ramah discusses, if you got a chance to see it in Kuf Lamites Dalid, so the Ramah says that we will have Kol Olam Dvar as at least a possibility. Get into it in a little more detail, but at least a possibility in a situation of a Sveika Dedina. And if you have a Machlokas HaPoskin, so we don't know who wins, you can use Kol Olam Dvar in that situation. So many others who came after, including the Sma, objected to this sack of the Rush, the Ramah, excuse me, partially because of the Rush. And so if you follow the Rush's Mahal, that the reason Kol Olam Dvar works is because you're passionate, because you know you're right. So they ask Stove, what if you don't know you're right? What if the facts are not in dispute? Nobody's lying. The only question is, how does the halacha relate to these facts? And that's a dispute. It's a machlokas haposkim, what the halacha should be. So it would seem like the Rosh Hashanah wouldn't work in that case. And it would seem that there isn't any reason to think that anyone's going to have this extra energy, because deep down in his heart, he knows that the Shach is right against the Taz. Although, you'd be surprised, and people do have the ability to connect themselves to a certain sheet of Lahalacha that supports them and feel a strong passion about it. But presumably that's a whole different type of passion. So if you don't have this whole mechanism going on, and the person deep down knows that he's right, so how is that going to work? And the Sma notes from the Shurma Sadeshin that we just mentioned, that the Ramah himself quotes. But the text of the Truma Sadeshin seems to contradict this Psak of the Ramah. That's what the Sma is concerned about. Because the Truma Sadeshin, a little bit different than the Rush, but similar, says it shouldn't apply to a Sveika Dedina. Because the way he formulates it is that, so if we're working off the Nikola Veika Melada Milsa kind of setting, that's when we have Kol Olam Dvar. What do we mean? We mean that there's stuff out there that could helpfully tell us something. So we'll start interviewing witnesses, we'll search the drawers for some old shtaris. Something could turn up that could provide information. So whether or not you get into the Russian's whole psychological motivation issue, either way, it seems like Kol Olam Dvar is based on there being something external that's going to push this along. And if the only issue we have is a machlokas haposkim, so then it's not clear why it should be that Kol Olam Dvar should work. Follow the issue? So just in terms of what I was saying about everything lining up or not lining up, so you see, this kind of puts the Rush and the Truma Sadeshin in the same camp. Even though we just said the Truma Sadeshin is very down on Kol Olam Dvar, and the Rush is probably the biggest supporter of Kol Olam Dvar. So, sorry?
You say last week the Rush also had Kol Olam Dvar?
Not that he likes it per se, yeah, that we said that he. Sorry?
I think the
Rashba, just that he uses Ikma Mekma Mother Milsa as the main determining issue.
And I think we're going to use the very thin.
But that might be good, you know, because he says that the way we came to the Rashba is that it leads into saying that Yachloku is a pshar, but maybe we prefer pshar. Who knows what we really like. So in any event, if it's a point well taken, so here you have this rush saying it applies to a Sveika Dedina, and that doesn't seem to flow with, I'm sorry, can you get this, the Ramah saying it applies to Sveika Dedina, and that doesn't seem to flow with the rush that the whole power of Kol Da'al Mugvar comes from the person knowing that he's ready. So it leads you to think that what the Ramah's position is that essentially Kol Da'al Mugvar is a siluk. It is that we're walking away from this. We can't do anything here. So maybe in a case of a machlokas aposkim also, fine. We're at a deadlock. We don't have a hachra. So we'll walk away rather than do anything else. Let them find an edge. That's the best we can do. But if that's the case, so then you might think, I don't know how powerful a question this is, but this is a question that some of the Achronim were bothered by, that then what should the story be about Tfisa? Right, if you say that it's not a real psak, Bezdin is moving away, so what should the rule be about Tfisa? What do you think?
That's
probably the so Tfisa should work, right? You should allow Tfisa. You should allow back and forth grabbing forever. So the Ramah saying that applies to a Sveika Dedina, meaning that it's not a real psak, should also allow Tfisa. So what does the Ramah say about Tfisa? Nothing. Which is significant. Because the Shulchan Aruch says that Tfisa is not allowed. And if the Ramah disagrees, he should have said something. So the assumption is the Ramah agrees with the Shulchan Aruch, Tfisa is not allowed, which sounds like there's a real psak here, but says it applies to Musveke Dedina, which sounds like it's not a real psak. That's what bothered some of the later Svarim. I'm not sure how much it has to bother you, because again, then everything has to line up in a perfect package. And you could say that he thinks it's essentially a siluk. But maybe as a public policy, as a takana, we're not going to allow people fighting forever. So we have one shot at the apple and it's it. Maybe we made a takana like that. The Taz seems to have a statement along those lines. Reasonable. The Rush, who is not consistent with the Ramah, but the Rush in his discussion, it says that we have Kol Da'al Mugvar because we don't want to allow everybody to have machlokis and meriva forever, right? You saw that phrase in the Rush? Right? We don't want to let people fight forever, so we have this one process where they'll duke it out, and this will get us to the MS, and that's it, right? The Rush does it one time. So that's a sentiment we could agree with, even if you don't agree with the Rush, that it's an endless process. You could still agree that we're interested in not having ongoing endless machlokas and meriva. So it's reasonable to say that maybe the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah think that there is some public policy that we shouldn't allow Tfisa after Kol Da'al Mugvar happened once, but they still don't necessarily think that it's an actual psak. I think that's a reasonable thing to say, but okay, maybe not. Maybe it is somewhat of a kasha on the Ramah.
Even without an actual psak, it's Kol Da'al Mugvar, why now by what's in the
so because the question is, what does that chazaka represent? Right? So, first of all, the answer is only yes and no there. To a certain extent, we do apply it, because maybe Bezdin is not going to be the one motzi. He's being motzi on his own. And the reason he's being motzi and we're not stopping him is because the chazak itself is kind of flimsy, based on the fact that he got it himself through this undetermined. We know that it wasn't originally in his property. He got it through this somewhat indeterminate process. So that's not a real chazak so much that we're going to interfere with somebody else doing the same thing to him. But again, whether or not Bezdin would be motzi mosuk, motzi from this person is also a little bit of a question. Hi.
If we're saying that Bezdin is just stepping back and people are going to figure out themselves, whoever wins that first Tfisa, the other guy's not going to say, like, okay, he got it. Like, we're not going to fight anymore. He's still going to be very upset. But now, if he finds Bezdin and Bezdin didn't help, I don't know, is it really going to stop my focus?
Doesn't sound like it, right? It sounds like so. That's why it's compelling to say that even if you don't buy the Russian's whole thing, that one line about you don't want there to be endless machlokas and meriva, we do have such an interest. So it's not so hard to imagine that there's some type of a dindarabanan or a takana that we should only allow one shot, no matter what we think that one shot represents. It's a siluk, it's a emistic process of the psak, whatever it is. It's easy to imagine why there's a public interest in saying kol dol mubar is a one-time thing.
So even if at that one time, he's not going to just...
Well, if we say this also now, if we say that we make a public policy that you can't go back at the apple, so then that would be the rule. If you say we don't allow tefisa, which is what the Shulchan Aruch says, and that we don't allow tefisa, we're just trying to figure out why does he say that? Does that mean he thinks it's a real psak, as we said before? Maybe not, maybe. Or the Ramah being silent, at least. The fact that the Ramah doesn't object. So the Ramah passively says that we won't allow tefisa. Does that mean he thinks it's a real psak? Or maybe he thinks it's good policy. We shouldn't allow tefisa because we'll have endless fighting.
This is still different, though. This isn't saying that it definitely stops after one. It could still be that if somebody brings Adam. It's not like...
Correct. No, because then that's the...
It's not that it's one. It's just that the tefisa specifically...
Right, because they have this language of adshe yisbara adover.
Right.
So if something was really going to turn up to prove it, so then that would reverse it.
Right.
So all the Rishonim seem to have that as part of their clause, that ultimately there is a possibility of truth coming out in an absolute way and then establishing one or the other should actually get it. That's what it sounds like. So there are those who want to suggest, for example, Rabbi Bezalel Sholti in the Sefer Mishnas Yavetz. Others have this idea as well, but Mishnas Yavetz is a good place to look. It's in Choshen Mishpat in Siman Yud Ches. I believe it's available on HebrewBooks.org. Definitely a good thing to download in general, especially as the Yom Tov come up. So the Orach Chaim volume of the Moedim is very useful. But in the Choshen Mishpat volume in Siman Yud Ches, so Rav Sholti suggests that, and this will neatly parallel what we were talking about yesterday in terms of Yachloku, guess what? There are two types of Kol D'Olam Gvar. Now maybe there is a Kol D'Olam Gvar which is a Psak of Beis Din, and there's a Kol D'Olam Gvar which is a Siluk of Beis Din. And it depends on the circumstances. If it's essentially an ikel amekim lada milsa kind of thing, or the rasha svara is relevant because there's some passion there, so then this process is a psak. And then taka we would not allow any tfisa after this happens. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch is addressing. But then a little bit later, in Sifdalit, when the Ramah brings up Sfeikin Dedina, Machlokas Aposkin, and then he talks about Kol D'Olam Gvar, that's a different kind of Kol D'Olam Gvar. That's a Kol D'Olam Gvar of a Siluk. That's Beis Din stepping away. And the truth is, it's kind of consistent with what the Ramah says, because if you saw the Ramah, so he doesn't say you have to do Kol D'Olam Gvar. He actually says either it could be chalukah, if that's possible, or kol d'olam gvar. So it sounds like, really, if you can do yachloku, that's better. But if we can't have yachloku, then kol d'olam gvar is also an option as a siluk. So maybe he's talking about a different kind of kol d'olam gvar. By the way, that's especially relevant. We mentioned this yesterday, we didn't say so much today. But the question is, Kol D'Olam Gvar, with all of its connotations, is that one specific thing or is that an expression? So we saw yesterday that the Tur, the son of the Rush, who's the biggest fan of Kol D'Olam Gvar, in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, the Tur uses that phrase to refer to anarchy, to a clearly bad scenario. So we mentioned that we don't know if he's necessarily talking about our Kol D'Olam Gvar or if it's an expression, but that's certainly a possibility that Kol D'Olam Gvar lends itself to either referring to a specific method or a broader concept. So it could be we have different usages, and what the Ramah is saying here is that earlier in Sif Aleph we're talking about the din of Kol D'Olam Gvar, and now if the Sfeika Dedina, Kol D'Olam Gvar, let them fight it out as a siluk. Perhaps a different usage. And then you could have going back and forth
afterwards. Presumably that would be true. This idea, this question of what Kol Dam Gvar is it both or is it one or the other? So he suggests, as others do as well, that that's the position of Leib of Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara in Bava Basra. And the Gemara in Bava Basra talks about Kol Dam Gvar and the fight over it both. And it discusses the question of what happens if the litigants say to Beis Din, we want you to hold on to this. That's one issue, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. And the other issue that the Gemara has right after that is what happens if Beis Din already does take it. So would Beis Din take something that's in their possession and throw it to the wolves? Would they hand it over to a cold Olam Gvar situation? So you have one view, I believe it's Rabbi Yehuda, who says that lo tafsinan, that we should not hold on to it. But he taught us lo mafkinan, that if they did take it, then they would not release it to a cold Olam Gvar scenario. So it could be, as Rishulti and others suggest, that what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that he doesn't see cold Olam Gvar as a real act of Beis Din. So the normal implication of cold Olam Gvar is that Beis Din is not going to get involved. So therefore, we would tell them, lo tafsinan, they should not hold on to this item, because that's not what's going on in a cold Olam Gvar situation. However, if they do, for whatever reason, now they have it, so now they're responsible for it. So to throw it to the wolves, to throw it to a non-Beis Din process of cold Olam Gvar, that would not be right. Okay. So it's also interesting if you consider the Rambam. The Rambam on this issue. So first of all, I'll just refer to it very briefly because it's complicated. But if you look at the Rambam on the Mar Makomos from Hilchas Erechim, it's evident through there, without going to go back around now, that the Rambam does apply Kol Dam Gvar to a situation of Sveika Dedina, to a situation of an unresolved psak issue. Which gives you the impression that he doesn't think that it's a real Maisa Beis Din, but it's Beis Din walking away. So that might be relevant, as Rishulti suggests, to understanding the Rambam's key formulation of Kol Dam Gvar, which was also on the Mar Makomos. Remember, the Rambam talks about the Arba case, about the boat. So he says the rule of Kol Dam Gvar. But then he adds on at the end that if they don't want to do this, they have another option. What's the other option? Anyone see it? Yachloku b'shvua. They could decide to split it with a shvua. So the Arsameach asks, why do you need a shvua? In our Mishnah in Shnayim Ochsin, so Beis Din is running the show here, they're saying, okay, you're going to do Yachloku with a shvua. And we have the whole discussion of what the shvua is there for. Here, you have a Kol Dam Gvar scenario. And the two parties, they're nice guys, they're not the tough guys, say, you know what, let's not do this. Let's just split it. So if they agree amongst themselves to split it, so why can't they do it without a shvua? What do they need a shvua to be part of the process? Here's the next question. So Rizalti suggests that there's essentially two scenarios here. That either Beis Din is going to get involved or it's not going to get involved. So if Beis Din is not involved, that's Kol Dam Gvar, and they're fighting it out. But if they want, they can say, listen, we don't want to fight it out. We want Beis Din to be involved. Like those in the Gemara who asked Beis Din to be Teufis. So then they're saying, not that we'll split it amongst ourselves, but that we want Beis Din to preside over the Chalukah. And how does Beis Din do that then? What's their policy? Bishvur. You have invoked the Shvua mode of Yachloku and Beis Din. What's a little bit different than what was a little bit difficult really in what we discussed yesterday, but from a synergy perspective especially, you have to mention it. So you have to kind of make that work, and the result can discuss this. Again, if you want to look it up, I believe Sefer is available on legalbooks.org. That the Gemara we discussed yesterday at some length, the Gemara in Eilu Metzias, about Simanim v'Simanim, where the Psak is Emuna. So the Rambam mentions that Psak, but then he says also that if the two competing Simanim holders agree, they can split it. And they can split it. He doesn't say anything about a shvuah over there. So there, you have to figure out why he doesn't require a shvuah. So Rajalti wants to suggest, is very much at odds with how we saw things yesterday, but it happens, that essentially Beis Din here, whoever's holding the property, doesn't have the right to split it because it hasn't met the standard of proof where they're competing simanim. But since they are the two players, which is the opposite of the approach we mentioned yesterday, that they're not defined as the only two players in the world. But since he understands from the Rambam that these two simanim holders have at least made themselves the two players in the story, so then they have the right to say, we'll split it. And then the person with the aveda can say, all right, I can give it over to you two because you are the population of people who it might belong to. And if you've agreed to split it amongst yourselves, I can let you do that. Jonathan?
We said that we
right, it's the opposite of what we said yesterday. It's the opposite of the approach in the Gemara. This is in the Rambam, we mentioned the Gemara, but it's not consistent with, we mentioned yesterday that we're not sure that's the whole playing field. And within this, he's assuming the Rambam understood that it is. So it is a different approach. Hi.
We don't always say,
correct. Right, but the question within the Rambam, how do we decide when you do and when you don't? And you would have thought, if I had to guess, you probably would have thought the opposite. You would have thought that in the Koldal Muvar situation, where it's clear that it's a voluntary Yachloku, because it's not a normal Yachloku situation, if they chose Yachloku, so why should I need a Shvuah? And the case with the Shomer Aveda, where it's under custodial authority, you would think that is a Shvuah situation. So if I had to guess, if I was going to split it, I'd probably split in the opposite direction. So that's what still requires some kind of clarification. So I think it's Eli Menachem Dover, is that the order?
But maybe it has to do with the specific case of the Rambam Zillah with the Sfeik of Dina, that neither one of the Dinim are Yachloku. So in order for them to split it, they need Beis Din to create a new Din.
In neither scenario should have been Yachloku, because it's the Bo case is called El Mvar, and the Aveda case is Yehemunah. And so both cases, Yachloku is a secondary track. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so. I think I'm saying that,
okay. Sorry.
that in the Rambam's case where they do Yachloku with Yeshua.
With the boat case.
In the boat case, yeah.
Okay.
The reason why they need Yeshua is because it's a sacred Dina.
But it's not. So that case is a suffix in the Seas. We just don't know who the actual owner of the boat is. So I'm not sure, but let's say if it was a Svekidin, how would the Shavuah be helpful?
Because there are two opinions on what to do, and neither one of them are saying the whole. One of them says also. Presumably, one of them says wrong.
It's a subject. What the din should be in the scenario itself.
Yeah,
that's a Svekidin. Okay, it's an interesting question. That makes you take a Shavuah because otherwise it's not the appropriate venue.
You're not planning either one.
We have to figure out if that answers up everything, but that's a point well taken. Nahum?
Yeah, I think in the Ayla case, the reason why you need a shvuah is because once Beis Din accepts the object, they can't release it without knowing that these are the only two people.
It's a reflection of that line in the Gemara in the Basra, Itafas Lamakinan.
Right. So therefore, these people have to take a shvuah that they're really the ones that own it. So
for Beis Din to be responsible.
Beis Din can't just release it. You know, they decide, okay, we're going to divide it. It could be that neither one really
Yeah, it's reasonable, and that's consistent with what he said also, that he's saying that in Kol Dol Midbar, they're not involved. But you're basically choosing, either you want Bezdin, you don't want Bezdin. You don't want Bezdin, Kol Dol Midbar. You do want Bezdin, so then that's Yachloku, and it's Bezdin's Yachloku, it's not you're deciding on your own to split it, and that's a Shvua, which is consistent with the Gemara saying, Yitafas Lo Mavkinan, which is a reflection of the same idea that if Bezdin is involved, then we have to be stricter about how we're doing things. And not only will we not sort out the Kol Dol Midbar, but even a voluntary Yachloku we're going to do under our rules. Yeah, I think that's consistent. So let's just quickly dove. Sorry?
I guess when the Rambam says they have a choice, right? Kol Dol Midbar and Kol Dol Midbar, whoever really owns it is going to want to go take the Shvua. I mean, whoever doesn't own it is not going to want to take the Shvua.
Same issue we always have in the Shvua, that the Shvua should really intimidate the person and make the story
end
there.
But
here,
he doesn't have to even choose to do a with the Shvua, he can choose to
call the Shvua. So he may, if he's a dishonest, weak person, right, in both senses of the word, so he might say, I'm too weak to win in especially according to Rush, right? You know, the Rush's version. The guy knows he's going to lose Kol Dol Midbar because he's a liar. But he's willing to lie ready, and he's willing to lie b'shua, so it's a good path for him. He doesn't have any problem with lying. He doesn't have any chance in a Kol Dol Midbar scenario.
Unless they both really picked it up.
With the boat case, we always assume it's unlikely.
Right. With the other case, the Simonovic, it could not be lying.
Right. In that case, at that point, in that case, he doesn't have the shvua.
Right. So there.
Right. As you said, because there's no definite Ramah. Okay. Could be. Right. That's true. That's also a reason to take that approach. That there's no Ramah necessarily in the case of the boat, in the case of the Aveda. So let's say no shvua. So let's just quickly, as we spoke about. So we spoke about the question of what Kol Dol Midbar is in terms of how to characterize it. Separate just from the issue of whether it's about fist fighting or proof fighting, but how do we classify it? So the Rashbam seemed to say it's about Bezdin saying we can't get involved. Maybe we'll end up messing up the din because it'll come out which way it is. And we pose the question, does that mean this is a positive reason to do Kol Dol Midbar or a negative reason not to do Yachloku? And the Rush, who saw it as really a psak, that this is a process that Bezdin will preside over that will lead to the truth coming out because of the passion that will be connected with the one who knows that God is on his side, so to speak. And we mentioned how that ties in directly to the question of whether it's one round or many rounds. The Rush says Beferish, it's one round. And the Shita Mekubetza says Beferish, it's endless rounds, because he doesn't think it's really a psak. We discussed a little bit why the Shita Mekubetza all of a sudden throws in Lekla Meikam Lada Milsa, what everyone else always assumed this was, Ikla Meikam Lada Milsa. And we talked also as an extension of that question, the Tfisa issue. Tosfos and other Rishonim say you can have Tfisa after Kol Dol Midbar, so Hamar Paskins you cannot. Then we discussed the question of Ephraim's actually ownership. Would you say Lachem, for example, we can make up a good sukkah story about the Esrog. Would we say that you actually own it, so to speak, or is it just it's in your shush right now, but it's not considered to be yours? We discussed the Shumas Hadesh, and it seems to be the Shritasim being pretty down on Kol Dol Midbar, where he says, here, we only say it where the truth will make Bezdin really be embarrassed, so therefore we do this instead, but we don't seem to like it, consistent with what we saw previously in a different Shuvah, where he also seems to be down on it. And it's relevant to the Psak of the Ramah, that the Ramah says we would invoke Kol Dol Midbar in a case of Sveika Dedina. So everyone asks, but the Rush of Svara doesn't apply in such a case. You're not going to have any passions because it's a unresolved question of halacha if the facts are not in dispute. And the Petrim Sadeshan also says that the Ramah actually quotes that it's not going to lead to anything turning up because the only issue is a issue in Shulchan Aruch. It's not an issue of any facts on the ground. So that led to the suggestion that there are two dinim of Kol Dol Midbar, one which really is a psak and one which is more of a siluk. If it really is a psak, presumably there would be no tfisa afterwards like the Shulchan Aruch. But the Ramah is mentioning in a different context where it's a suffik, Bezdin is walking away, and that's why he actually mentions it as the second best option. He first says Yachloku, if that's possible, but otherwise Kol Dol Midbar. Then we also ask the question of how specific a phrase Kol Dol Midbar is, especially in light of the fact that the Rush's son uses it as an expression for anarchy. It indicates that it could have different connotations in different settings, and maybe it's even two different dinim within what the Shulchan Aruch talks about. And we then discussed the fact that this could also be relevant to the Gemara's statement, the Rabbi Huda's statement, that we shouldn't do tfisa b'ritafas l'mafkinan because it's not a process of bezdin, so they shouldn't get involved. If they get involved, they cannot throw it out to the wolves because it's a violation of their fiduciary responsibility. And then we talked also about the Rambam, that the Rambam, when he talks about Kol Da'al and Gvar, so he says at the end, if the parties want, Yachloku B'Shvua, the Ar Sameach says, if it's voluntary, why do we need the Shvua? And we mentioned this approach, that it could be that it's not really a Psak of Bezdin, Kol Da'al and Gvar. So if you're saying you want Yachloku, you're saying, forget this, we want real Bezdin, and Bezdin's procedures is Yachloku. And as Menachem pointed out, it's also consistent with that line of Eitafas L'mafkina, that once Bezdin gets involved, they don't have to be involved, but if they're going to be involved, it's going to have a different standard of protocol and procedure, whether it's not releasing it to the process to begin with, or even with the Yachloku, it's going to involve a Shvur. And then we had to deal with the fact that the Rambam somewhat at odds with what we saw yesterday, in the case of the Simanim situation, where the rule is Yehei Munaf, the Rambam again said there's an option for the two parties to do Yachloku, and there he does not require a Shvur. And Rejalti, for one, understood that to mean that, contrary to the way we discussed yesterday, that they are defined as the two parties. So theoretically, it's okay for the shomer to turn it over to the field of these two parties, and if they want to divide it amongst themselves, they can, but that's not a ma'isa bezdin, and therefore there's no process of shvua that's going to be connected with that. Okay, so God willing, tomorrow we'll try to get all our loose ends in, and we will proceed from there.